continue on TV Confidential.
Ed Roberts, with a reminder that Ann Serling and Jody Serling, the daughters of Rod Serling, will join us later on the hour, along with Mark Scott Screet, author of The Twilight Zone Companion, as we celebrate the 65th anniversary of the premiere of The Twilight Zone on CBS television and the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rod Serling. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, on the line with us right now is Harrison Page. Harrison Page, the actor known around the world as Joshua in Lionheart, Captain Trunk on Sledgehammer, CPO Robinson on CPO Sharky, and Niles in Russ Myers Vixen. Russ Myers Vixen now available on Blu-ray through Severn Films, SevernFilms.com, as well as Amazon.com and wherever else Blu-rays are sold. You can follow Harrison Page on Facebook as well as HarrisonPage.com. We'll ask Harrison about some of his early roles in television in just a second. But first, before we went to break, Harrison and I were talking about how the success of Vixen at the box office resulted in Russ Meyer getting a three-picture deal at 20th Century Fox, the first of which was Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, and how Russ thanked Harrison by casting him in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls after he had sent the script for Beyond the Valley of the Dolls to Harrison and asked for his input. As we pick up the conversation, he respected you, and I've learned enough about this from talking to other actors. When you have an opportunity to work with a director that you've worked with before, it's really good for both you and the director because you know each other. You know, you have a shorthand, and you know what he knows, what Harrison can do, and you have an idea of Russ is going to let you do and want from you.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. You know, I actually knew what I was doing in a very collegiate way. I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we trusted each other. That's the main thing. We trusted. Because he'd always say to me stuff like, you know, oh, good job, good job. He talked like W.C. Fields. Funny man.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what's good. That is a good movie. Yes, you're a great actor, great actor. And I would always look at him like, I don't know what he's talking about. But it's okay. It's like I was a kid kicking rocks, you know. He trusted me. He trusted me enough, and if you wanted to go on to be on the Valley of the Dolls, he trusted me enough to have me come in and read with everybody. So,
Severn Films, the distributor of the Blu-ray release of Vixen, I mean, they're marketing it as part of their Bosom Mania trilogy. So, and as you mentioned, and Rust is known for casting actresses with ample bosoms. But this is what, and I think you'll agree with me when I say this, Harrison, is that Russ could get a performance, a true, authentic performance, out of any performer, you know, and that's what made him such a great filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that in person. Whoever it was, he could get it out of him. And not only that, you know, he'd go to, you know, I don't know, I'm not, I mean, it takes 50 takes to get it. The women, you know what? Interesting to me. The women, he really, 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 really worked hard with them. If he wanted something, he'd keep doing it until he got it.
Yeah.
It's like I was telling you about the Vixen thing where Erica actually cried. He actually turned off the camera, said, I'll stop for a minute, and we'll go back to it, because she just couldn't get hysterical, could not cry. And again, I told you what happened. I don't need to repeat
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was also the kind of guy who would encourage. I think I saw him encourage a few actors on Beyond the Valley of the Dolls to get them, and that was mostly the young girls that he would say, okay, give me this, see if you can do it this way, come on, let's do it, we can do it, come on, let's move do it, that kind of thing he did. He was good at that.
Russ Meyer's Vixen, now available on Blu-ray from Severn Films, SevernFilms.com, wherever Blu-rays are sold. Harrison Page, the actor known around the world as Niles in Russ Meyer's Vixen, on the line with us. You can follow Harrison on Facebook as well as HarrisonPage.com. Now, you had mentioned earlier you had signed with an agency around the time that you were cast in Vixen. They must have done something right, Harrison, because within a year of you doing Vixen, you not only got hired again by Russ for, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which you just talked about, but you landed roles in three of the most watched TV shows at that time, Bonanza, the FBI, and Mannix. For a working actor, especially for a working actor starting his film career, those were all good credits to be on at that time.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Especially for Bonanza, man. Mm. Ooh, wow. I had such that show, and Michael Landon, and what he did and what he was expecting of it. I still have those feelings. Ossie Davis, who played my father in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, man, because I didn't expect what happened. I didn't even think about it. I got an agent now. I couldn't have, good jobs. And that particular show, Michael Landon read me. It was just him and me. And that don't happen no more.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about college and stuff, all that kind of thing. And then he said to me, he said, I saw Vixen. And I said, you what? He said, I saw you in Vixen. You didn't have anything else to do but that. And he said, yeah, man. He said, I'm hiring you because I saw you in that. You were terrific. And we were except him. And he said, that part, it was right there.
Yeah.
He saw Vixen. Did you know that?
That I did not know.
Yeah. He saw it, man. Landon was mainstream, man.
Mm-hmm.
Mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
House on the Prairie. That had nothing to do with book breasts.
Mm-hmm.
That this stuff. And I was just beside myself when he said that. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But I understood it to a degree. And that is that Vixen actually was seen by a whole lot of people that I didn't think saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the FBI was around for a long time, and then what was the other show you brought up?
Mannix.
Mannix, oh my God. Okay, here's what happened with Mannix. Mannix was filmed in 1969,
mm-hmm.
I believe, and I was on Paramount lot with some other thing. I forgot what it was. I was reading before. And I knew that Michael and the rest of his cast and crew were on the lot, on the back lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I had read for Mannix with these guys. And I said, I'm going to go and see Michael because, he hadn't seen me since the airing of that show, the episode with the Wish.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back on the back lot, he was in a truck having a drink or something or another. I don't know what it was. I said, hey, Mike. And he said, hey, he was very welcome. He said, what are you doing over here? I said, I was just reading for Mannix. He said, how'd you do? I said, yeah, I think I did pretty good. He said, oh, really? He said, I know those guys over there. I said, yeah, I did. He said, so, did you feel good? I felt good about it. He said, let me make a call. He made a call to them and said, you gotta hire these guys. Guys, good. I got that part because Michael Landon interceded. So there you go. You were talking about, really impressing people, impressing
mm-hmm.
directors when you read. That was a situation where the performance on Bonanza was helpful in terms of me getting another job.
I've heard that about Michael Landon. I mean, I've talked to a number of people who have worked with him on Little House or on other shows, and what you said resonates with what they've told me. When he was a director, he was able to get the best performance out of his actors because he was an actor himself, but he was also very generous as a performer, as you just showed.
Truth, yes.
Now, of the three, the FBI was the least of the roles because, I mean, I think you had like one scene in it, but if I remember correctly, it was filmed at a car wash, or you were supposed to be at a car wash, and I think you had screen time with Ephraim, if I remember correctly.
I had screen time with Ephraim, as a matter of fact, yes. When you talk about that particular part, it's my memory like goes. It was such a short thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was one day's work or something like that. It was a really popular show.
Yeah.
But I don't remember a whole lot about it. I know I just went in and did. I think I was one of the people working at the car wash.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Your character was a car wash worker.
I didn't remember. Yeah.
Well, like I said, one of the things as a working actor, you go from one thing to another, and sometimes there are certain things you remember, like Michael Landon was on the lot when you read from Mannix, and some things is just you go from one to another, and you're just lucky that you're working, you know, and you're not thinking about anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that's true. You're not thinking about anything. No. Okay. No end result. You're just doing your work.
Harrison Page is on the line with us. Harrison Page, the actor known around the world as Joshua in Lionheart, Captain Trunk on Sledgehammer, CPO Robinson on CPO Sharky, and Niles in Russ Meyer's Vixen. Russ Meyer's Vixen now available on Blu-ray through Severn Films, SevernFilms.com, as well as Amazon.com and wherever else Blu-rays are sold. You can follow Harrison Page on Facebook as well as HarrisonPage.com. You're talking about how Russ was not the type of guy who would do take after take after take. If you got it on the first or second take, he would get cut, print, let's move on to the next thing. Now, in contrast, you did a Columbo with Peter Falk. And Peter Falk, I understand, was his approach was, I don't care whether it takes one take or 21 takes, we're going to do it until it's right.
Right. Yes, oh my goodness. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I could talk an hour, and we don't have an hour, about Peter Falk. Because I always had this artistic crush on him.
Mm.
I think you can call it that. I had seen him in a film years ago when I was a kid, about 1955 or something, in a film called what the hell was that thing called? Murder Incorporated.
Okay.
Like
Yeah.
And I was so. I said, "Oh my God, they hired a real thug." I mean, I was blown away by that scene with Mike Britt when he comes in and he says, and he's got this hat and his overcoat on, and he looks like a thug. And he was the only person in the film that looked that way.
Yeah.
And so he came and he said, you know, give you some place to live, and you don't treat me like, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just mesmerized by this man. And I never thought, I watched everything he did, including like Robin in the Seven Hood.
Mm-hmm.
All of the things that he did, I watched everything, and I think the other was Pocket Full of Miracles. I just loved this guy. So when I got the job on Columbo, I was so damn excited. And I just could not stand still. I was so excited to go. He's going to work with this man. And I got on the lot, and I remember that I was in my dressing room and somebody was helping me with something, and then they called and said, "See, Harrison, they want you on set. You got to go on set. They want a rehearsal." And somebody picked me up and drove me over to the look. And in this parking lot, the whole crew and Peter were back over in the back of the lot. And I got out of the car and I went over there to them. And shadow boxing.
Wow.
You know, just kind of playing around shadow boxing. So I got to him and I said, Peter, I just got the, he said, no, no, come on. So I said, okay, what are you doing? And he said, I'm doing you. I said, but wait, doing me from where? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And he said, you did this in a movie, you did this in a lineup, are you a shadow boxing? I'm doing you. Oh my God. You know, and that was years after, you know, after Lionheart.
Yeah.
And at that moment, at that very moment on that piece, and it was a 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
At that particular moment, I was completely relaxed.
Yeah.
No nerves, nothing, because he did that out of me. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I didn't even know he saw the film.
Yeah.
He did that to honor me, and I have never, ever had anybody, ever, or since, do that. That's who Peter Falk was. I mean, he was everywhere, and he didn't, you know, like in a lot of shows that you do, the regulars and stuff, not that, you know, they don't get close to the guest people that much.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, they don't care, they go, when your close-up comes, they go someplace and have some water. You're doing it for the script lady. She was not like that. I could see him play to me as a star, as the beautiful star he
mm-hmm.
was. I could see him playing to me in the scene. I never saw that before in my life. And I still today just get, you know, a little bit emotional if
sure.
you think about it, because he was the kind of actor that you want to examine to see what that is he's
mm-hmm.
doing and make it look that way. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Harrison will soon be seen in Magazine Dreams, a movie about a man who looks after his ailing grandfather while trying to make it in the world of professional bodybuilding. Magazine Dreams, scheduled for release Friday, March 21st. What can you tell us about Magazine Dreams?
Yeah, it's scheduled. I don't know whether it's going to make it. I mean, it's scheduled. Well, Magazine Dreams was, the answers were good. You know, I had to play a guy that was much, much older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not necessarily older than me, but looked older than me.
Yeah.
And he was sickly. And I had to lose some weight to look thick, you know, and bony and stuff. The guy that directed that was terrific. His name is Elijah Bynum.
And that's it. Elijah Bynum, that's it.
Yeah, Elijah Bynum. Wonderful man. And he directed it wonderfully, and it was loose and cool and stuff. And I've been working with John Majors,
mm-hmm.
Or Jonathan Majors. He was somebody who was very, very involved in just doing whatever the moment called for. And I like that kind of work.
Russ Meyer's Vixen, available on Blu-ray through Severn Films, severnfilms.com, as well as amazon.com. Well, Russ Meyer's Motorcycle and Russ Meyer's Up, also available for pre-order right now through severnfilms.com. For more on Harrison Page, harrisonpage.com. You can also follow Harrison's fan page on Facebook. Take a quick time out, then Ann Serling, Jody Serling, and Mark Scott Zacree will help us celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rod Serling when we come back on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Hi, this is Lawrence Leckerbill. You are listening to TV Confidential.
How do you do? My presence here is to acquaint you with an entertainment product which we hope and which we rather expect will make your product pushing that much easier. What you're about to see, gentlemen, is a series called The Twilight Zone.
Ed Robertson welcoming you back to TV Confidential, radio talk show about television. If you know your television history, folks, you know that calendar year 2024 and the 2024-2025 television season marked the 65th anniversary of the premiere of The Twilight Zone on CBS television, while this past December 25th marked the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rod Serling. Since its debut in 1959, Rod Serling's The Twilight Zone continues to leave an indelible mark on pop culture, captivating millions of viewers across three generations. It is one of the few shows that has never really left television. Somewhere, someplace, someone is not only watching The Twilight Zone as we speak, but they may very well be discovering The Twilight Zone for the very first time. Here to help us celebrate Rod Serling's centennial are Rod's daughters, Ann Serling and Jody Serling. Ann, of course, is the author of As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, an intimate portrait of the Emmy Award-winning creator of The Twilight Zone and Night Gallery, that is also a moving testament to the love between fathers and daughters. Ann has been on our program a couple times before. While this is Jody's first visit to TV Confidential, Ann and Jody, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Also with us today is award-winning science fiction screenwriter, producer, and novelist Mark Scott Zachary. Mark's credits in film and television include scripts for such classic series as Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5, Beauty and the Beast, and many other animated series, not to mention the 1986 version of The Twilight Zone. Mark also wrote, produced, directed, and co-created the epic sci-fi series Space Command. He is also the author of the groundbreaking, influential, and still very, very popular television reference book, The Twilight Zone Companion, recently revised as a third edition, in a book that has not only influenced such TV showrunners and filmmakers as J.J. Abrams, Vince Gilligan, Brandon Braga, and Ron Moore, but created the genre of TV biographies, books that capture the history of popular television series. Mark Scott Zachary, welcome to our program as well.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. This is for Ann and Jody, but I've said this to Ann before. I'll say it to you both again. For many of us, Rod Serling is an icon. Rod Serling is a mythic figure. And Ann's book particularly gives us a sense of who he was as a human being. And without taking away any of the mythic figure stuff, it reminds that he was a man of contradictions, like everybody else, and he was very much a loving father, like everybody else.
Yeah, he was nothing like the image that people saw on television. He was silly. He was funny. He loved the Flintstones. He did the best gorilla impersonation you could imagine, as is evidenced in almost every home movie. He did have a bad temper, but it was very short-lived. And, for instance, he'd get very angry, and then he'd walk out of the room and return about 5 minutes later and say, "Have you seen my twin brother anywhere?" he was just, I never went through the phase where, you know, a lot of teenagers go through where you don't want to be around your parents. I loved being around my dad, and my friends did too. He was fun. He was, and always interested in what my friends were doing. You know, he'd ask what their parents did, what they wanted to do. And, he practiced what he preached. He was a terrific, terrific human being and a great dad. And I never forget that. It's still a tremendous loss every day, actually.
When, Ann and Jody, when did you first realize that your dad was a little more well-known than the other dads at school? Jody first, then Ann.
You know, growing up with my dad, you know, we weren't affected by the limelight of Hollywood. My dad definitely protected us from it. He wanted us to be our own self and to, you know, go through life with our own things that were important to us. I did go to school with some kids that had famous fathers, but it wasn't like a big deal. I mean, he kept us grounded and told us to search for our own, whatever turned us on. He never tried to encourage us into the Hollywood scene, and just wanted us to be ourselves and be strong that way, I think.
And I would just piggyback on that. The paparazzi back then was not what it is today. It wasn't as invasive and insane, thank God. But
And the only, I mean, this is something I just thought about very, very recently. I mean, today, it's not unusual to go to school. Today it's not unusual to go to school down here in the LA area. And have people and have friends whose mom or dad work in film or work in television. Whereas, you know, because the medium was very, very, was still very much in its early stages, its first decade or so when you were growing up, it was a little different to have a dad who worked in television versus a dad who was a plumber or a dad who was a lawyer or something like that. And the fact that he was a writer, which is sort of an anonymous job, but he was the face of the Twilight Zone, so he was very visual. So that made him a little more well known in that way.
Things are very exciting. Hello, you're back. You froze for a moment.
Yes.
There you are.
We're doing this via Zoom, folks, so we're working through the kinks that are part of the pluses and minuses of modern-day technology. But
Yes, the wonderful modern age.
We're with Ann Serling and Jody Serling, the daughters of Rod Serling, Ann Serling, author of As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rod Serling, along with Mark Scott Zachary, author of The Twilight Zone Companion, both As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, and The Twilight Zone Companion, available wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon.com. Mark?
Well, the thing I'll jump in here. One thing I love about Rod and about hearing both Ann and Jody talk about growing up with him is that the Hollywood cliche is of the person who is so dazzled by being a star, by being famous, that they lose all perspective. They become Hollywood, you know, creeps, and they're terrible parents. You know, it's like a, you know, no more wire hangers, you know, all that stuff. But Rod was the exact opposite. He had his feet on the ground and he loved being, I mean, it was great to succeed, obviously, to have your writing out there and be a public figure, but he kept, it's wonderful to me that he had time for his family, that he had time for his daughters, that there was never the feeling of, oh, we're a footnote to his life, correct? Would you agree with that?
When I was writing my book, I read an article that said he worked 12 hours a day, and yet I never had that sense that he wasn't available. In fact, when I'd come home from school, we'd play basketball together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he was such a loving guy. I mean, that the thing that, that I love about Rod is that he had such passion for everything. You know, it's like he had passion for the work, passion for the life, you know, passion for you guys. I mean, it was, you know, it's wonderful. You wonder how he was able to cram all of that into 50 short years, you know, but gosh, I'm very gratified to hear how loving he was. And Jody, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and my sister would agree, is that, you know, that he was very grounded. Mm-hmm. I think at the beginning of his career, he was very shy, mm-hmm. but I will say that my mother kept him grounded, and she was his rock of Gibraltar. And if he did seem like he was straying a little bit or getting too involved in the scene, she kept him grounded. I mean, she was his main person for sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
Jody just mentioned Rod's wife, Carol Serling. I understand for you, Mark, that was part of your entree into the world of Rod Serling.
Yes, I would be probably living in the gutter with no career or life without Carol Serling. It was amazing. It was wonderful. When I got out of college, I knew I wanted to be a writer, producer in TV, but there were no classes in that. There was no way to learn it. There were no books on that. And so I thought, well, by studying one of the greatest, if not the greatest TV shows ever made, maybe I can learn how to do this. Plus, of course, I loved The Twilight Zone. I loved Rod Serling. And this was only 2 years after Rod's death. We're talking 1977. He died in 75. And, I knew if I went directly to Carol with this proposal of writing a book about The Twilight Zone, she would say no because she had already turned down major journalists. And I had one short story, sale and an art degree. So I knew there would be a quick no. But, when I was 16, I'd met one of the writers from The Twilight Zone, George Clayton Johnson, who was a phenomenal writer. He wrote Kick the Can and, Nothing in the Dark, and also the first episode of Star Trek ever aired, The Man Trap. And, when I told him I had an idea, I wanted to pursue this, he was able to introduce me to other people who had worked on Twilight Zone, who then introduced me to other people. So over a 3 month period, I interviewed 30 people who'd worked on the show before I went to Carol. And if Carol had said no, it would have been no. And I would have put in that time and effort, but it was worth it because there's a dog that goes crazy when they take it out for a walk. Sorry about that. Sorry about the noise.
That's okay. We've had many animal friends make cameo appearances in our group.
Yes. So after those 30 interviews, I set up a meeting with Carol, and it was at the house in Pacific Palisades, and she was wonderful. I remember being in that living room. Everything was exactly as Rod had left it. There was the room full of trophies, the six Emmys and the Peabody Awards and all of that. And I stood telling Carol what I had in mind and in terms of the book. And I felt very certain I could do it. I really felt assured that I knew how to do it. And she said, well, let me talk to some people and get back to you. And clearly she talked to people like Beck Houghton, who had produced The Twilight Zone, and Richard Matheson, some of the people that she trusted. And she came back and said, you've got full access to everything. And that was miraculous. And so I ultimately ended up interviewing over 100 people who'd worked on the show. And this is back when they were still with us. I mean, mm-hmm. Now most are gone. It's funny because I'm shooting a new TV show with Billy Mumy and Veronica Cartwright, who starred in episodes of The Twilight Zone. So they still are a lifeline to that history. So I spent 5 years from when I started the book to when it came out was 5 years. And it hasn't been out of print since. And I was literally crawling through Rod Serling's attic, because up in the attic in that house, there were these huge scrapbooks. Rod subscribed to a clipping service. And so every article ever written about Rod or The Twilight Zone, it was a chronological history right there in those volumes. And his files were up there. I found a book filled with scripts that were written for Twilight Zone but never made. Amazing, amazing stuff. And Jody and Anne both were so welcoming and so kind to me. I interviewed both of them, of course, and I still have the photos I took of you guys back in 78, you know, and it was like going through the looking glass. It was magical. And I have enormous gratitude because I started writing that book when I was 21, and by the time I was 22 or 23, I was actually writing for television as well. And so thank you all.
And,
well, I have to tell you, Mark, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've told Mark this before, that his book is probably one of the most informative down-to-earth books of the Twilight Zone ever written. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, he doesn't miss anything in that book.
What's surprising, too, is that he was 21, 22 years old and to have the wherewithal to be able to navigate through that is pretty.
Yeah. Stunning. And there weren't books on other TV shows really to use as guidelines, you know.
Exactly. If I may, I've written 7 TV biographies myself over the years. You and I have a mutual friend. We all have a mutual friend in Mark Dawidziak.
Oh yeah.
And when my first when I first met Mark for the first time, I said to him, "Your Columbo file book was very well. That was the model on which I based my book on The Fugitive and later Rockford Files." And Mark, being a very gracious fellow, said, "Truth be told, I based the Columbo file on Mark Scott Sicree's The Twilight Zone Companion. That is the Bible."
Yes.
So
yeah.
I would not have my books were not for you, Mark, and there would not be this whole library, this genre of books on television were it not for your book.
And it was very go ahead.
Tremendously helpful. As I wrote mine too, as I've told you, Mark.
Thanks. Thank you. Well, one of the things, it was fascinating because I wrote the book because I really wanted to understand how these amazing stories came into existence, how these amazing men were able to write these stories, imagine these stories, Rod and Matheson and Beaumont and George Clayton Johnson and Earl Hamner. And so when I was writing the manuscript, Bantam, my publisher, said, "Well, we want you to cut out all the material on the writers. Nobody cares about the writers." And I said, "That's my reason for writing the book, so I'll work a trade with you. You can use whatever photos you want." I had hundreds of photos from the Twilight Zone. I said, "You can select the photos. I won't have any say over that, but I need to keep this material in because that's why I'm writing the book." And fortunately, I won that battle. And because I wasn't doing a puff piece. I wasn't doing some fan, you know, trivial thing. You see a lot of those books that are very once over, you know, on various TV shows. But I really wanted to get to the meat of it and the heart of it. And, of course, that started with the writers. And Rod, of course, was, you know, more than anything, he was a writer, you know. Yeah. And everything else was in service, being the executive producer, all of those things, being on-screen talent, that all served his objectives as a writer.
Mark Scott Sicree is with us via Zoom, as are Jody Serling and Anne Serling, the daughters of Rod Serling. Anne Serling, author of As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, Mark Scott Sicree, author of The Twilight Zone Companion, the 2024-2025 television season marks the 65th anniversary of the premiere of The Twilight Zone on CBS, while this past December 25th was the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rod Serling. We'll take a quick time out. We'll continue our conversation with Jody, Ann, and Mark. We come back on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. That's 800-365-4216.
one more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239-0201.
Hey, friend, I hope you know this is Pat Boone, and you and I are enjoying TV Confidential with my buddy Ed.
Ed Robertson, along with our guests Ann Serling and Jody Serling, the daughters of Rod Serling and Mark Scott Sicree, author of The Twilight Zone Companion. Ann Serling, also the author of As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. We're celebrating the 65th anniversary of the premiere of The Twilight Zone on CBS television, as well as the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rod Serling. Rod Serling's centennial birthday was this past December 25th. The Twilight Zone Companion is not only one of the best television reference books ever written, it is also one of the most influential, having influenced a whole generation of TV series creators and filmmakers, including J.J. Abrams and Vince Gilligan, while As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, offers readers an intimate look at Rod Serling as a father and as a visionary, blending both personal memories with rare family photographs and letters. Both As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, and The Twilight Zone Companion, available wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon.com. Mark, Ann, and Jody, before we went to break, we were talking about how Rod was first and foremost a writer. As I mentioned before we started recording, a few months ago, I had a chance to watch the entire Twilight Zone series on Paramount Plus, and it's available on all sorts of platforms. But one of the cool things about watching it on Paramount Plus, not to give them a free ad on the show, but the prints on Paramount Plus include the wraparound at the end of the episode where he previews next week's show, and I think with every wraparound he did, he never failed to mention, next week we're going to have a story by George Clayton Johnson. Next week we're going to have a story by Ray Bradbury. Next week we're going to have a story by Buck Houghton. I mean, it was the writer in him who made sure that the writers who worked with him got their due.
But one thing that's really great is that he never said, next week is a script by me, and it's just terrific. I'm a terrific writer. You know, he had a generosity of spirit. You know, he didn't need to blow his own horn, you know, but he really wanted to put these writers, and when he won his second Emmy for Twilight Zone, he held up the award and he said, he addressed the other writers by name and he said, come over to my house and we'll carve it up like a turkey. And, you know, what a great guy.
This is a question for each of you. What do you think makes a good Twilight Zone episode? Ann first, then Jody, then Mark.
Well, I suppose it's a story that makes you think and then rethink, and is a teaching tool. For instance, there's a program in Binghamton called The Fifth Dimension where students watch the episodes and they learn about mob mentality and scapegoating and racism, and these are only fifth graders, and yet they really, really get these programs. And the teacher showed the episode, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. And at the end, she asked the class, so who are the monsters? And she said the entire class stood up.
Wow.
So I think these episodes that, again, act as a teaching tool or just leave you, like any good movie or good literature, leave you haunted in some way. That, you know, you retain this and have learned a lesson.
Yeah.
I think also, you know, that my dad, every story that my dad wrote had pieces of him in it. I mean, they were very personal. And he didn't write just to entertain, but also to illuminate, you know, social injustice. And he believed, and he was told that, you know, his role of a writer was to menace the public conscience. That was important to him. His stories were definitely, you know, challenging and heartbreaking and even, you know, more clearly knowledgeable and more personal to what my dad went through. Like when he went through the war, a lot of his stories depicted what he went through the war, or going back into time, walking distance, yearning for the growing up as a child and missing so much because he wasn't able to come back after the war to see his father when his father passed on. And that haunted him. And I think when he did Walking Distance, which was one of my favorites and most everybody's favorite, was because it was really him wanting to go back in the past and recapture what he had lost by going off to war. And it's my favorite episodes, and it makes me cry all the time when I see the end of it. It's just so incredibly personal and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He told a writing class that he had a propensity to write about the past. And it is because, I'm sure the war, because he enlisted the day after he graduated from high school. He wanted to go to Germany to fight the Nazis, but of course he was sent to the Pacific. But, and like so many vets, saw so much trauma, and, he wasn't allowed to come home when his dad died, even though he had enough points. And it was a grief that he never really processed, like many of us don't. But.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, the things so great about television, several things, it's a collaborative medium. And so when you have a writer like Rod, who at the same time was the producer, he was really the modern showrunner and the first modern showrunner, where the writer runs the show as the producer. The buck stops with him, and Buck Houghton was there to help Rod bring that vision into the world. He was a perfect producing partner for Rod, and yet the great part is that it's such a powerful medium, because you write a great script, and then it gets to the actors, and they see the great script, and then they turn in this great performance, like Walking Distance with Gig Young and Frank Overton as the father. So wonderful. And then it goes to, you know, the cinematographer, George T. Clemens, and it looks phenomenal, gorgeous. It's the most beautiful black and white show ever made on television, Twilight Zone. And you have the director, Robert Stevens, who again brings that enormous ability with him. And then you have Bernard Herrmann, the great composer of Citizen Kane and Psycho and, you know, North by Northwest and so forth. And he reads that script and he sees what's going on, and he brings this incredible score. And so you have, you know, great art doesn't come about accidentally. Great art comes about because people are putting in everything they've got, coming from the heart, not holding back, just really, you know, you make a jewel. You know, it's just, I've said before in interviews that Rod was our Leonardo da Vinci, and he really was, because most of us who work in television, and this is my 50th year as a professional writer, and I've done hundreds of hours of TV, we look to Rod as our, you know, Mount Everest, as our, the pinnacle of what can be done in the medium. And frequently when we're writing scripts, we'll go back and watch something like Walking Distance or Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, and we'll use that as sort of a divining rod, for what, no pun intended, for what you can do if you don't aim low. You know, most people aim very low, and that's why most TV shows aren't about anything. They're about an hour. You know, and but Rod understood that this was an incredible opportunity. Because at that time there were only three networks, so you were reaching 30, 40 million people every time your episode aired. And I think Rod had a significant effect on the American public and the world public too.
I'm trying to remember the source of this quote. I believe it was Buck Houghton who described a typical, most plays, most films, most television shows are structured in terms of three acts: conflict, complication, resolution. I believe it was Buck Houghton said a typical Twilight Zone, because it was short, it was 22 minutes. Everything was third act because you had to focus on, because you only had a limited amount of time to say what you needed to say. What do you each think of that?
Anne, would you go first, please?
Well, there's a lot of pressure in that, isn't there?
Yeah. And Jody, I don't know if you ever thought about that one. I can jump in too. Well, Richard Matheson said with Twilight Zone, the trick was you take you make it as real world as you can, as realistic as possible, and you drop in one drop of the fantasy element. So it's whatever that fantasy element is, and then you play it out as straight as you can to the resolution. So, you know, whether you say it's all third act or whatever, but the great part of Twilight Zone, the thing I love about Twilight Zone is, it's predicated on that twist ending. Most of the Twilight Zone episodes have a twist ending, but they're so full of heart and so full of humanity and so full of wisdom that you can watch them again and again and again, even when you know what the twist turn is. So Eye of the Beholder, for instance, with the woman waiting.
And Jody and Scott will be back next week for part two of our conversation. We'll continue to talk about the legacy of Rod Serling and the Twilight Zone in particular, plus Anne and Jody will share a few more personal memories of growing up with their dad. Part two of our conversation with Anne Serling, Jody Serling, and Mark Scott Zachary next week on TV Confidential. In the meantime, both the Twilight Zone companion and As I Saw Him, my dad, Rod Serling, available wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon.com. While Russ Meyer's Vixen, now available on Blu-ray through Severn Films, SevernFilms.com, wherever else Blu-rays are sold. You can follow Harrison Page on Facebook, as well as HarrisonPage.com. Ed Robertson, back to Tony Figueroa, Donna Ellen, Phil Grace, and Susan Silver, thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market? Or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to Tectonic.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Join Token's radio show every Tuesday night starting at 6 on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy Tuesday nights at 6 on KCNR.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.